Welcome to the Right to Reason podcast. I am Robert Stanley. Today, we talk to God himself. Brian Keith Dalton, better known as Mr. Deity. The Mr. Deity Show is a YouTube series that takes a satirical look at God and religion. It's hilarious. And my conversation with Brian today is fantastic. Let's get started.
It's the Right to Reason podcast.
This is Mr. Deity, and you have the right to reason, though I'm not fond of
This episode of the Right to Reason podcast is brought to you by our patrons and contributors like me. We have all recognized the value of the unrestrained marketplace of ideas and have decided to make a difference. You can make a difference too. Contribute at patreon.com/right and learn more about your right to reason at therighttoreason.com. Your activism is appreciated.
The problem, Timmy, is the bang, or the lack thereof.
Sir, there is no sound in a void.
Well, then let's get rid of the void. Who needs that thing, all right? I'm not going to pay for a big bang without a bang. That's like asking me to pay for a wagon wheel and not getting a wheel.
What do you want me to do here, sir?
I want you to make this thing sound like a Bruckheimer film.
Did you tell him about the problem?
With the bang?
No, about the whole time thing. We're having a really hard time.
I told him we could do this in 7 days.
No, not that. The whole creating time thing. No one's figured out how to do it.
We can't just create time?
Well, what we figured out is in order to create anything, we already have to have time. All right, look. In any act of creation, you first have to have a moment where there is none of whatever it is you're creating, right?
Right.
Right.
And then in the next moment, you create the thing, and there it is.
Right, so what's the problem?
Well, in order to create time, time already has to exist. See, we first have to have a moment where there is no time, at which point we create time, and then there is time. But to have that first moment requires an already existing fabric of time.
So we need to find time to make time.
Yeah. Right.
And what kind of time are we talking about?
Any time.
How much?
Just some time.
And that'll give us...
All the time.
R&D has been working on this?
Over time.
So can we get this done in time?
In time or on time?
Both, really.
I don't know. We're running out of time.
We gotta pick up the pace on this then.
Double time. Got it.
If we can't figure this out, what are we looking at?
Downtime.
Serious downtime.
Downtime?
Big time.
But if we figure this out, what do we got?
Nothing but time. And after that, we won't need you for another 15 billion years.
Okay, so vacation time. All right, let's put everybody on this and get this show on the road.
Showtime, right. In the meantime, we're in the same boat with this nothingness project.
What's the matter?
Matter. We can't have any of it. We have to shun it completely.
So I have to completely change my position on the matter.
Right.
I guess I can be antimatter.
No, we can't have any antimatter either.
I thought antimatter was just the opposite of...
No, it's still something.
And we need...
Nothing.
And without it, we can't create...
Anything.
Well, that messes up
everything.
Why do I need to create time and nothingness?
Well, if you want to be the God of Aquinas,
right,
the big G, you need to create absolutely everything.
From nothing.
Right.
Boy, that's something.
Plus, we don't actually know if nothingness is even possible. I mean, it's certainly not probable.
Well, why? Because...
Well, because there are an infinite number of ways in which something can exist, but there's really only one way in which nothing can exist. Plus, nobody's ever actually seen or experienced nothingness. I mean, even when it was just you, that was still something.
So we need to create nothing so I can create everything?
And we don't have much time.
Well, we can't have any time, if I understood you correctly.
Well, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, how about this? What if we just ran out of time?
What do you mean?
What if we just ran out of time?
Brilliant.
Right? What if we just ran out of everything?
Well, then we'd have...
Nothing.
We'd have nothing. Sir, that's the key to this whole thing. You are a genius every time.
I think it's nothing.
No, we actually have something this time.
Now if I can just get some free time.
Well, if we pull this off, you deserve a little me time.
Well, hey, sweetie, what is this?
Tea time.
Keith Dalton, filmmaker, producer, and also known as Mr. Deity.
Yes, that's me.
Popular
that's me.
For the Mr. Deity show, all that you can find on YouTube. Do they still have it on Crackle?
I don't think so. It's just gone. You can't really find season two of the show. They just kind of took it and threw it into the ash heap of history.
And
I think you can see them though if you go to the Mr. Deity website. I think that's the only way to see season two.
And how do they find that website, Mr. Dalton?
MrDeity.com.
That's pretty easy to remember.
Yeah. M-R-D-E-I.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
E-I. Because if you go to Mr. Diety, you're gonna get a, if you go to Mr. Diety, you're gonna get this whole low carb kind of paleo diet, thing. Mr. Diety is a totally different thing.
It's a David Avocado Wolf subsidiary or something.
Yes, yes.
All right, man. Well, I'm happy to have you here. I'm happy to get to talk to you. I got a lot of questions. Like,
I have a lot of answers. So that's perfect. So, many of them are just complete bullshit, but
all right, well,
you're going to enjoy them.
Okay, here's one right off the bat. I've noticed with your style at, since the recent 2016 election, you have started kind of retooling a little bit. You're focusing. You're still doing the activism stuff, you know, anti-religion, but you're adding in a lot more political content.
Yeah, it's not a lot. I mean, the last Mr. Diety I did was very Trump oriented because it's so funny because
did you went to Trump University?
Yeah,
God Diety goes to Trump University.
About a year and a half ago, actually before the inauguration, I was going to be writing a Diety, and I hadn't written one for a while, and I just had that moment where I thought, I'm going to go back and watch some of the early Dieties and see what was I doing in the beginning that people were liking so much. And I went back and watched a whole bunch of them, and I was sitting there watching it, realizing, oh my God, I was doing Trump before Trump.
Yes.
If you look at Mr. Diety, he is Trump.
Yes.
He is Trump in every way. He's just full of shit. He has this just unbelievable ego. You can't tell him anything. He can spin everything just the way he wants to, and there are never any consequences for him. I mean, it's truly amazing when I think about it how this character was in the ethos, you know, 11 years ago before he even, you know, thought of getting into politics. So I'd been wanting to write something Trump-oriented with him.
It fits so perfectly with that Diety character.
It really is.
It's like the earlier ones I noticed, like Lucy, and for anybody that isn't like real heavy with YouTube and stuff, Mr. Diety on YouTube, it's one of the larger shows you'll find, but there's this character named Lucy who is Lucifer, and it's a woman. The devil's a woman, and she's smarter than Mr. Diety, who played by Brian Keith Dalton. She'll use words that are, you know, like four syllable words or something, and Mr. Diety, who's God, right? And he'll be like, what do you mean by that? She'll explain it and be like, oh, yes, of course, I know that word. All right. And it's
right.
Like what you're saying,
right,
though, in that same vein, is it is so
Yeah, dumb. It's you said large, I would say bigly. You know, he's bigly, and he's, you know, one of the features of his character is that he turned off his all-knowingness. Because it ruins, you know, the endings of M. Night Shyamalan movies, even the good one, I think we said in one episode.
And, even Sixth Sense, you know, we all know what you
birthday,
meant.
You know, surprise parties, and he doesn't like seeing all the masturbation, I think is another reason he did it. And that was actually based
some
on...
Some of the masturbation
that was actually,
is okay.
Yes, that's true. Some of the whole idea is based on an actual theological idea offered by Rabbi Harold Kushner, who wrote the book When Good Things Happen to Bad People, or When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Both are awful.
Wait. You're flying by me here really fast. You're saying that this was an actual apologist claim?
Yes. Yes.
Jesus
except for
Christ.
what Kushner went for, instead of God turning off his all-knowingness, he turned off his all-powerfulness.
Oh,
so I thought if you're really going to be a deity, the last thing you're going to turn off is your all-powerfulness. So I thought it was much more likely that he would turn off his all-knowingness. But when he does turn off his all-knowingness, he's an absolute fucking idiot. Because can I say that? Can I cuss on here?
You,
I guess
you can fucking cuss.
Okay. So he's just an idiot because, you know, you don't use it, you lose it kind of thing. So he's not too bright. And I have to tell you, the not too bright thing is based on the actual character that you read in the Bible, who doesn't know that the moon is not another source of light, or that women can, you know, break their hymens pre-intercourse. There's so many. The God of the Bible is a fucking idiot. He's just
stupid. And he has
stupid.
Regrets.
How are you omniscient?
Yes, he has regret, of course.
With no regrets.
Yes. So,
but he has regrets.
So this is my way of kind of explaining why he's so stupid and all of that stuff. And it has some theological grounding if you're paying attention to Kushner.
It's funny how within the joke, a lot like our late night talk show style, making fun of Trump, but within a joke style, you're saying some things that make people go, hmm.
Yes, right. A lot of people don't want to look at the negative stuff about religion for good reason, because it's depressing. But if you can put it in the form of a little bit of humor, it gets through. Humor is an amazing port of entry. It's unlike any other, because if you're laughing, it's hard to just negate an idea in your head, because you've laughed at it. And there's something about laughter that gets in, partially, I think, because of the fact that it's involuntary. I make you laugh. You know what I mean? When comics, you know, really go over well, they say, I killed him. It's kind of a hostile, I'm forcing you to do something that you may not even want to do kind of thing. So it's a great port of entry for getting in ideas that people wouldn't otherwise even want to think about.
So, that's obviously that's the downside. But, you know, after 3 days, we bring you back to life. And from that point on, it's a slam dunk.
3 days I got to be down, sir?
I said 3 days in the prophecies, but, you know, there's fudge room. We could put you down late Friday, all Saturday, and then, raise you up at the crack of dawn on Sunday. So 36 hours tops, 35 if we did it on the week that they set the clocks forward.
Well, I don't know.
Well, you'd be doing everyone a really big favor.
Yes, sir. And what's in it for me again, sir?
Well, like I said, you'd be a partner.
Junior partner?
No. This is full partner. Completely equal, 1/3 vote. Plus,
keep talking, sir.
Yeah. Plus, this could be a really good career move for you. You know, get you in on the ground floor.
Yes, sir. You know, and I must say, I really appreciate that offer. It's just, I guess I don't know why you can't just do it yourself, sir.
Look, you know, I'd love to do it. I'm not chicken, if that's what you're... I mean, I don't know that that's what you're implying, but... Look, there's a lot of stuff to be done here still. Larry can't do it all. It's time, is what it is. Take time, trying to get the time off. Can't do it.
Right. Sir, and why can't you just forgive people again?
Because of the whole sin thing. It's killing us.
Right.
Sin equals death, so you go down and lead a completely sinless life, and death has no...
Whoa. Sir, did you say that I have to lead a sinless life?
I said that before.
No, you didn't.
I'm pretty sure I did.
No, sir, you didn't. No, I trust me, sir. I would have remembered that one.
Well, I apologize then, because I was... Larry, I gotta take this. Hey, Larry.
Hey.
You're on speaker with me and Jesse.
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus, sorry.
Hey, Larry.
Hey.
Hey, where are you?
I'm about 3 feet behind you.
But I am in the 13th dimension.
I was talking with the foreman earlier, and we're trying to decide how dark you want to go with
the dark matter.
Yeah, take that all the way to Void, and then back it off of Skosh.
Oh, okay, great.
Thanks.
Hey, wait. Jesus was wondering...
No.
The health plan does not cover...
Crucifixion.
That's good. Did you just come up with that, or is that material?
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
No, he was just wondering how he does the whole sinless life thing.
Oh, it's fully God, fully human,
sir.
Oh! I came up with that, right?
Yes, of course, sir.
Okay, all right, I like that.
Yes.
Okay, so when are you coming back?
Tuesday, sir.
Tuesday. Okay, well, how about this, you schmuck? Why don't you bring me back something this time, all right? Get me a t-shirt or something.
Will do, sir.
He never gets me anything. So you got that, right? Fully God, fully human. That's how you do the whole sinless life thing.
Well, that hardly sounds fair.
Why?
Well, are any of these people going to be fully God, fully human?
No.
Well, then, you know, this whole thing, it seems a little bit out of whack. I mean, you create these people, but then you make them way beneath you.
Well, I'm the deity.
Right, but, sir, then you expect them to live up to your standards.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, sir, and then you want to threaten to punish them with, you know, hellfire.
Hellfire.
Damnation. Eternal torment.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, this whole thing, it just doesn't really seem to make any... Oh, you're good. Oh, you're good.
You're getting the whole picture now.
Oh, I'm getting
the whole picture.
Yeah, I'm getting it. Yeah, I'm being punked.
You got what?
You're punking me.
What does that mean?
Oh, what does that mean?
You're good.
Oh, yeah. What? What does that mean?
Yeah. Where they at?
Huh?
Where they at?
You know, can I bounce something? You're a funny guy. I want to bounce something off your head and get a feel for it, because I have mixed emotions about this topic in particular. In terms of, like, free speech, but also in terms of censorship of comedy, that sort of thing. A lot of comedians now are saying that they can't play the universities like they used to, because the universities are saying, well, you know, a lot of your jokes are offensive. The term safe space gets thrown around a little bit, that sort of thing. Like, do you feel like comedy, in a way, has to be a little bit offensive to be funny? Like, it's the taboo that makes you laugh, but it's the way that that taboo topic is brought up that filters out the cognitive dissonance that's going on, and then your response is only to laugh at it because you're like, eh, there's a little truth in
right.
that. You know,
right. Yeah, I don't think comedy has to be offensive, but I don't think it... I think there is a lot of freaking out about comedy that is offensive, because, you know, satire in particular, which is more what I do in Deity Show, it really is about kind of offending a little bit. It is about pushing you in an area where you wouldn't want to go, and people who don't want any kind of offense in their comedy will have to, you know, throw away Mark Twain and Jonathan Swift and all of the great satirists of history, because it's you know, they don't want to be offended, but they don't mind it if we offend the other guy. You know what I mean? And it's right. gotta be just an open, fair playground where everyone can go at everyone, and we all take it with a grain of salt. Now, are there jokes that go too far? I don't know. It's one of those things where that's more along the lines of personal taste, because I cannot be offended by a joke. I don't care what it is. I had the best time at the Global Atheist convention in Australia back in 2000, whatever, 11 or 12 or something like that. Jim Jeffries got up and did this amazing bit about babies burning in hell that I thought was one of the funniest things I've
heaven's
ever.
Full of babies.
Yes, I've thought it's one of the funniest things I've ever.
You're walking around kicking babies out of your way.
And then he talks about the parents who've lost the baby, and he offends them. He goes after them with their babies burning in hell, and it was so outrageous, and I laughed my ass off, and he had some really good points that were deeply buried under the surface of this joke. Now a lot of people would be horribly offended by that thing. I my rule in life, and I learned this early on from a kid that I used to hang out with when I was young. His name was Guy Larson, and one of the things that I noticed about him is you could not offend him. You could call him all kinds of names. You could make fun of what he was doing or wearing and everything, and he would laugh. And the power of that was amazing to me. And I think a lot of people are giving up their power to be offended, to play the victim. And there are victims. So I don't want to say no one should be playing the victim, because there are victims and they should be played.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
But there is a great power in just not being able to be offended. So it's one of my personal mottos. I will not take offense at anything you say, even if you mean to say it offensively at me. I just won't do it. I'm going to go with Guy, and I'm going to just laugh.
My kids are in junior high right now, and one of the things that I told them, because I got picked on ruthlessly in junior high.
Yes, I did as well, but in elementary school. In junior high, I fought back. I started winning.
They put me in Christian school come high school, and then I started fighting back against, like, the skinny little short Christian kids in khakis, so yeah. I didn't have the bravery that you did, but it happened.
It wasn't bravery. Anyway, I figured out that I had an iron jaw because some kid, I was walking home from junior high, and some high schooler going the opposite way punched me in the face just randomly for no reason. And it shocked me, but I sat there and I realized, oh shit, that didn't hurt. And I turned around and I jumped in from behind and I beat the crap out of him. It was the beginning of a series of a lot of fighting in my life there for a little while.
Ass kickery.
Yeah.
But long story short, I tell the kids, like, if somebody's messing with you, if they're picking on you, don't let them see you cry. Yeah. Don't let them see you bleed. Don't let them see you react. And I kind of feel like, along the same theme that you were saying, is a lot of these responses to offensive comments, I get in one way they're saying we're fighting back from a social justice perspective, and I don't want to shit on that, because sometimes social justice is effective, and sometimes it's fucking beautiful, man. You've got some judge that you come to find out the guy's a racist, and then everybody stands outside of his home and holds signs that says this guy's a racist, he shouldn't be the judge. Okay, or, you know, maybe you say, well, how about not his home? Do it at the courthouse. All right, fine. Whatever the method is, sometimes this really is effective, where the whole town looks at it and goes, wow, I didn't know that about the guy. Now that I know that, let's get somebody else in this job, because he's not necessarily judging everyone equally if he's racist. Sometimes it's effective. But in the other way, if you get picked on in school and you make a big scene about it, it only encourages the other side. And it kind of makes me think, whenever we respond to comedy in such a way of like, oh, how could you say that about this topic or that topic? Well, it only encourages them. I mean, just look at the troll factor that has really increased in the Trump presidency. They love him because he's a troll.
He is the troll in chief. That's what I always call him. He is the troll in chief.
Speaking of baby jokes, I love that one that you did. I wish I knew the episode right off the top of my head so I could direct people to it. But if you go to the Mr. Deity YouTube page, it's one of the first ones that pops up. But you're talking to Satan again, I believe. And she says, "What? You know, how is it you're okay with bloodshed?" And you're like, "I'm not okay with bloodshed. You know, I don't want to kill the guy. I'm against murder." And she says, "But you killed a baby." And you're like,
"It's a lot less blood. Yeah, yeah, yeah." there are some jokes I've gone for in Mr. Deity that are just they're just horrible. But the thing is, this is a guy who ordered the murder of babies. You know, we're not talking about a nice person. And people forget that, you know, this guy who supposedly came down and took human form and suffered for your sins also asked human beings to murder little babies. You know, it's just the whole thing is just so ridiculous. I have no tolerance anymore. After doing this for 11 years, it's hard to, I don't have any sympathy for religious folks anymore, because it's just so much stupidity. Just read the book. My dad became an atheist at 82 because he finally read the Bible. That's a true story.
Really?
82.
At 82?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to go down this rabbit hole with you for a second, man. I wanted to read you one of the latest tweets from the Don before we get to that, because I just want to get your take on it. But before we get to that, okay, my father, Christian minister, right? Very, very fundamentalist, very Republican. You know, just, he fits that. He's a nice guy, okay? Really nice guy, really smart guy, right? I'll present something to him, and I'll say, look, to believe this isn't logical, and he'll say things like, well, I guess believing in God just isn't logical, and I'm fine by that, you know? And it's just like there is no getting through. And sometimes I'll be thinking about it, and I'll think, do I really want to? I mean, the guy's, you know, he's like in his 70s. Do I need to even argue this anymore? Just let him be happy, for Christ's sake, you know?
Right.
For Christ's sake. But you know what I mean? But your dad in his 80s, in his 80s switched over. Did you feel like that was a positive transition for him?
Yeah, even at that age. Oh yeah, it wasn't even a question for him, because he had. I gotta say, my dad was not a true believer. My dad was always the guy who. So he joined the Mormon Church because we grew up Mormon. He joined the Mormon Church just to keep peace in the family, and I always knew it when I was growing up that he was not really a strong believer, if a believer at all. But he was upset when I left the church, and he was upset when I became an atheist, and, you know, gave me all the, how you think everything came to be, you know, and all that kind of bullshit. And of course there's a God, you know, and all that.
Look at the sunset.
Over the years, he just grew a little more, you know, I think my leaving the church and then becoming an atheist kind of gave him permission to, like, think about it. You know, it was one of those things. Well, my son's a good kid, and I love my son. And he's an atheist, and he's still a really good kid. In fact, he's probably a better kid now than he was when he was religious. And I think that gave him a lot of permission, but he did seem to be just you could just feel that weight lift off of him once he became an atheist. And part of it was because, you know, he and I never got along when we were young. And then, you know, I became a liberal Democrat because he grew up during the Depression. He was born in 1918 and loved Roosevelt and the Democrats. And I was, you know, if you're Mormon, you are a Republican. You just are. That's just who you are. So after I left the church, I became liberal. And then a few years later, he became an atheist. And we ended up getting along really well for the last 15 years of his life. So that was a big benefit to him. But also, you could see there's so much gratuitous suffering and bullshit in religion that just plagues people mentally, where they're wondering about whether they're accepted by this being upstairs, supposedly, who has all these requirements. And in Mormonism, you have a lot more requirements than other religions. And you're supposed to be living this way and doing this and blah, 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 blah. And my dad was always kind of a free thinker. If he heard something that he thought was bullshit, he would just say, that's bullshit. And he was very much a kind of a skeptic without technically being one for almost all of his life. So I think for him, it was a good thing. But your dad sounds like it may not. I like that he's honest enough to say, yeah, well, I don't need it to be logical, because that is the truth of religion. Religion in and of itself says it doesn't need to be logical, because it's all based on the supernatural. And the supernatural, by definition, is not and cannot be rational. It's beyond the causal predictability of our universe. And so you can have things be this and that, where that would never work in our world. But in the world of God, everything is, you know, all is permitted. As Dostoevsky said about the non-believer, it's true. It's more true about God. All is permitted. God can do anything. There's nothing he can't do. And if we put our stupid little puny human minds and say, oh, well, he can't do that because that's not logical, God just says, bullshit. Logic is something you guys have. That's your construct. I live above that. I live beyond that. And that's in essence what God is living beyond that. And he gets to change the rules when he wants, and he gets to do whatever he wants. And he just is what he is. And you just have to follow along. And, you know, there are some people who will live a happier life being religious. And I don't necessarily try to get them. Like, I never would have tried to convert my mother. She was a true believer, and she would be lost. And there are some people who, you know, there are people who say, well, I can't be good without, why would I be good without God? I want those people to have as much God as it takes for them to be good people. I think in a more general sense, religion as a whole is just a huge detriment to human progress and peace and really almost every good thing on the planet in a bigger way. But on a small way, on the personal level for individuals, it's kind of like you kind of have to judge, you know, person by person.
Truth doesn't seem to matter within the confines of the Bible. And it's very similar to the information age that we're in,
yeah,
and the Donald Trump age that we're in, where we've got a tape that just came out where Trump is admitting, or he's talking to Cohen about paying off Stormy Daniels. We see Trump just recently in Helsinki, obviously backing Putin, throwing his own intelligence agency under the bus, as it were. It's relentless. It's relentless, and they still support him. Here's a tweet he had recently. It's right after Helsinki, and he says, I'm very concerned that Russia will be fighting very hard to have an impact on the upcoming election. So that's a weird thing to say right off the bat, because now he's admitting that. He says, based on the fact that no president has been tougher on Russia than me, which is also weird, because his first 2 weeks in February of 17, He drops sanctions. Anyway, sorry, I have to read the whole thing as a whole. He says, let me start back. Based on the fact that no president has been tougher on Russia than me, they will be pushing very hard for the Democrats. They definitely don't want Trump. This is that weird kind of stuff that's very analogous to what you were saying about how Mr. Deity has kind of been like a Trump personality all along. Now, here he has been revealed to be totally full of shit about the Russia investigation all along, and now he's saying Russia wants to help Democrats. How insane is the time that we're living in?
This really does go back to my realization that Trump is Deity, or Deity is Trump, because it makes perfect sense to me that evangelicals, or as I call them, evangenitals, will go along with this guy, because this is exactly how God does things. He says one thing one day, and he says one thing and the other thing the next, and somehow they're all okay. They can make it all work. They're so practiced, religious people, at the mental gymnastics required to have it both ways all the time. I mean, the guy made an apology for the Access Hollywood tape, right? He made an apology, a public apology for the Access Hollywood tape. And now his position is that it's not my voice.
What? I hadn't even heard that one.
He says that's
a fake audio
that's
recording?
That's not my voice. Yeah, it's not my voice. What? Yeah. You know, this whole last thing where I meant to say won't. Everything else he said was about
would.
Throwing our intelligence agencies under the bus
at Helsinki in the press conference. Would.
But this one line, he said, I meant to say won't instead of would. Would instead of wouldn't or whatever. Yeah, I can't remember.
It's insane.
But it's just, it's like, really? And what you have to understand is that these people don't care. They want what they want, and what they want is power. And that's the only thing that matters to the religious. It's the only thing that has ever mattered to the religious throughout history. Power and the ability to make the world in their image and the image of their God. And that's all they care about. So whatever they have to do, the ends always justifies the means. The political nightmares that atheists often get attached to, you know, Stalin and Pol Pot. And even Hitler, though he was a Catholic, and blah, 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 all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's the same bullshit. It's we have an ideology. Ideology is the bane of human existence. We have an ideology which is unyielding to reason. This is just what we believe and what we want, the way we think the world is. And the ends always justifies the means. There's no regard for process. They're just going to go in and take the Trump thing to me is the backlash of white Protestant supremacy that they really felt that they lost in 2000, what was it, 15, 14, with the gay marriage ruling at the Supreme Court.
They were
beside themselves. This is no longer a Christian nation, all that kind of stuff. And they were just going to do whatever they had to do to take it back. And there's also something called loss aversion. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's a psychological, it's a cognitive bias, basically. But it's a principle in psychology, which we understand now, which is kind of easily stated like this. If you're going to make a bet, the winnings have to be so much greater than the possible loss to get you to make the bet. Because the feeling of loss is so much more devastating than the feeling of reward is in winning. So for instance, they ask people, will you make this bet? The odds are 1-1. So you're going to lose as much as you would win. Well, no, they won't do that. You have to at least double it and sometimes triple and quadruple the possibility of winning before a person will make a bet, because the risk of loss is so horrible. We are risk averse creatures. We hate losing far more than we love winning. So people who have had privilege, like white Protestant Christians since 1619 is when the slave trade started here.
Yeah.
People who have had that privilege forever, if you ask them for equality, that now feels like a huge loss, because they've had the advantage for a very, very long time. And what we've been doing since really the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act in the mid-60s is asking these people to, yeah, you don't get to have the privilege of, for instance, keeping others from getting married, for instance, or you don't get the privilege of keeping these great schools to yourselves. One of my favorite statistics is that when our elite schools like Harvard and Yale and all of these great schools finally started allowing minorities and women, test scores went through the roof.
Hmm.
They shot through the roof. And that's because all of a sudden everyone had to compete.
Yeah.
When you have privilege, you get shit quality, basically, because if you have the privilege, you don't have to do your best. Your mediocre will get you by. So you had test scores at Harvard and Yale being very mediocre for a very long time, and then you had women and minorities who were really hungry and wanted to, you know, get ahead because they'd been put down for so long. And the test scores shot through the roof, and everyone had to compete now, and all of the test scores were raised.
Almost like
it's one of the values of diversity.
Hmm.
Is that everyone now has to compete, and everyone ends up doing a better job. But anyway, I kind of got off the track there. I went on a tangent, but it makes perfect sense to me that these people will just not give a shit about truth or anything, really. You know, children crying at our southern border because they've been stripped from their parents. And 55% of Republicans said, yeah, they're okay with that in the poll that came out just after
that started happening.
And they even asked him, wow, really?
You know, why are you doing this? He goes, well, it's the Democrats' law. They gave us the law, which is just insane.
Right.
But then on top of that, they say, well, if you're going to play that game, you're going to change policy and then blame it on the Democrats, at least do an executive order. And it is exact words. I played them on the show just a couple weeks ago. You can't do it with an executive order. And then 2 days later, he does an executive order.
Yes.
Stopping the thing that he was doing.
Right.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
In terms of equality that you were talking about, one term that gets thrown around a lot right now is, do you really want equality, or do you want equity, or do you want equality of outcome? And it's kind of gotten popularized under this kind of new intellectual dark web, I guess the term is being used there, is, you know, Peterson, Rubin, Weinstein, these kinds of names.
Well, it's a long thing. The question of equality of opportunity versus the equality of outcome.
Hmm.
That's been a long-standing thing since I remember being a kid. That was one of the questions. But the problem is, how do you get equality of opportunity if you don't at some point ask for outcomes to be leveled in some way? Because, like, how is the inner city kid going to get the same education as Barron Trump?
Right.
They're not going to get the opportunity. They're just not going to get the opportunity because his opportunity is all about having access that these kids don't have. And this to me is just another bunch of bullshit where we don't really know our history, and we don't care about how much we've oppressed certain peoples and genders and all of this kind of stuff. And you know, in religion, in Mormonism, one of the things that I did like about Mormonism is that the idea of repentance always included making it up to you. So you had to there was something called restitution. You had to make restitution when you did a wrong. It wasn't enough just to say, I'm sorry. And now let's move on from here. No, you had to restore what you'd fucked up. And if you couldn't restore it, that's where things got really dicey. Like, for instance, in terms of Mormon theology, murder is one of those things that's very hard to get forgiveness for because you can't restore the person's life. And so there was this idea that I always liked growing up with, you owe it to the person not just to say I'm sorry, but to make it up to them. And we are a country who does not make it up. We say, yeah, you know what? You're right. We fucked up. Sorry. Let's move on.
Yeah. It's a hypocritical thing.
Yeah. And the moving on, you can't move on. How do you move on? You know, I'm a person who, for instance, is very much for reparations for,
really?
For blacks. Yeah. Because
you just want to give them money, huh?
I just want to.
I thought you were a libertarian.
You know what I wanted? No, I haven't been a libertarian for 20 years, but
oh,
I was.
Okay.
I don't want to give them money. I want to give them what the fuck they earned.
I want to give them what the fuck they earned and that we took from them. For 246 years, we stole their wages. I mean, that's aside from all the other horrible shit for which we owe them in a way which can never be repaid. How about just their fucking wages? Or how about just the fact that we kept them from wealth by redlining them so that they couldn't have access to the wealth building opportunities of home ownership like every other person on the planet or in the country had? There are things where it's not a matter of giving them something because, oh, we're sorry. It's giving them something because we owe you. We absolutely owe you. This country was built into an economic power on slave labor.
So it's not that, necessarily since like 1860, white guilt.
No, since 1865, there should never, after 1865, there should never have been a poor black person in this country. They earned it. They earned it in the worst fucking way. And you're going to sit there and say, well, I'm not going to give them. You stole their lives, their entire lives, and every moment of their labor. The only thing that they have to get ahead in life, you took from them. So just pay it back. Just give them their wages. That would be, that's my argument. That's, oh, by the way, that's, I think that's Christopher Hitchens' argument as well.
I didn't know that.
Now, there are also good arguments for the pain and suffering and all that kind of shit and rectifying all of the other stuff. I mean, this really, this is another thing that we've been doing for really since, you know, we had, people like to think of this as the longest, the oldest democracy, but we haven't been a democracy for very long at all. You had, at the very beginning of this country, you had only white landowners who could vote. And then I think in the early 19th century, you had white male suffrage so that every white male got a vote. And then, you know, it wasn't even 100 years ago before you allowed women to vote. And then securing the rights of all people to vote really didn't come until the 1960s. So we've only been a democracy for, you know, 50 years in any meaningful sense. And then the second that started happening and things started going the wrong way, people in one party started figuring out, oh shit, we don't like this. The father of conservative, whose name I can't remember, there's a video of him saying, I don't want everyone to vote. And that's the truth. They don't. They don't like democracy. There's a lot of people who don't like democracy, particularly the religious, because the religious don't have any fidelity to that idea. It's not part of their ethos. The religious way of governing is authoritarianism. Hmm. It's not democracy. People will talk about how, oh, you know, America is a Christian nation. There's nothing Christian about America. There's nothing free speech oriented in their Bible. You say the wrong thing. You blaspheme. You don't follow the prophet. They string you up.
Or even a thought crime.
Yes, even thought crimes. Exactly. There's nothing about due process. I mean, if you look at the first 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights, they are just all a complete rejection of canon law and the shit that was going on during the Inquisition. That's basically what it comes down to. So these people don't like democracy. They've never liked democracy. They think they should be privileged because they're God's favorite people. And I think that accounts for a lot of what we're seeing right now.
You know, in terms of democracy and everyone having a vote, I was speaking to a friend of mine recently, and he was saying that the ID laws to be able to vote restrict his right to vote. Right? And I kind of pushed back. You know, I'm very liberal, and I get that conservatives play these little games, the gerrymandering, right, the this, the that. You know, I get it. But with that one, it kind of had me for a little while. Like, why shouldn't everybody just have an idea? It had me until I talked to this one gentleman, and he says, I can't vote and you can. Why is that? I'm like, I don't know. Just go get a driver's license, man. I went and got mine. He says, okay. He says, do you ever get pulled over? I'm like, yeah, sometimes, you know, I'm speeding or I run a stop sign, whatever. We all get pulled over. He goes, exactly. He says, what'd you do? I said, well, I paid the damn thing. And he goes, why? I'm like, because I want to still get to drive. You break the law, don't break the law if you don't want to pay for it. You know, he goes, right. He says, but the reason that you paid it is because you could. He says, what happens to a poor person when they get pulled over just like you over some petty traffic thing and they don't have the money to pay it? They get a warrant. What happens when they have a warrant? They can't renew their driver's license. What happens when a voter ID law comes along? They don't get to vote. They don't have the right to change this country. They still go to work. They still get taxed, and they get taxation without representation simply because of their socioeconomic status. And that blew my mind.
One of the state Supreme Courts has just outright said, I think it was North Carolina, said this is just outright racial bias. I mean, they literally targeted with their voter ID laws blacks. I mean, it's so clearly in there the way they've made everything work. It's just another way to keep people from participating. And one of the things that I've learned over the years is something called the wisdom of the crowd. For those who don't know, wisdom of the crowd is something discovered by one of Darwin's cousins, who realized that when you have people with a vested interest in just guessing something and giving their opinion, like the weight of a bull at a state fair, you are more likely to get the closest to the correct answer by taking the whole of all the answers and averaging them than you are selecting any one answer in particular. And now we've done studies, and this is an absolute truism of life, that the more participation you have in trying to answer questions, the closer you are in terms of taking an average and getting the right answer. So it's one of those things where you realize that these ideas of diversity and respecting all people, and even the people that you don't think like, there's a lot. I remember when I was conservative back in the 80s, there were a lot of people who didn't want other people voting because they said, well, they're uneducated. Of course, we've been keeping them uneducated for hundreds of years, but we don't want them to vote because they're uneducated. It turns out that even the uneducated put them into the pot. If they all have a vested interest, and that's one of the parts that cannot be taken for granted, you will get closer to the correct answer, to the best answer, even on a plainly empirical question like, how much does this bowl weigh? It's a fascinating idea, but you just have to open it up to everybody and accept the ideals upon which this country is supposedly founded, that all men are created equal. Well, that is, it's in there, but it's not the way we behave as a country.
Remember that show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, with Regis Philbin?
Yes.
And the you had your lifelines. You could call a friend, or I can't remember all of them, but I know one of them was you can ask the audience.
Right.
And that was like the best one.
Yes, of course.
Because they would all figure it
out. That's right.
Just by the most people pick
that
D.
Is the wisdom of the crowd in a microcosm, very much so.
Mr. Dalton, I was expecting a hilarious laugh track of a conversation, and it started that way, and then I find out you're a really deep guy. You got a lot of ideas that might not necessarily, like, it's like through your humor you get these heavy thoughts, you get these heavy contrarian or contradictory ideas, you know, that might offend some people, but these ideas are yours. This is who you are. Is your You're a really serious dude, apparently.
Well, I said it to you earlier before we got on the air. I'm just another schmuck on the planet, and I really feel that way. In fact, I feel that way probably more than you would think of me that way, because I know what a schmuck I am. I know what an absolute schmuck I am. But there are things that I care deeply about, and I have always wanted to know the truth about things and find the best way to do things. And I'm genuinely interested in making a better world, which is one of the reasons why I do any of this stuff that I do, because I don't have a huge following anymore, but I do get the little emails every now and then from somebody who writes me and says, oh, you know, I just left Mormonism, or I just, you know, I was in a fundamentalist Christian thing and your videos kind of got me thinking about this. And they tell me how much better their lives are, how much happier they are and all of that shit. And I go, okay, well, you know what? I don't have a big audience anymore, but this one person, I'm going to go for that. As for any depth that I supposedly have, that's simply a matter of me in life being able to, I've had a lot of free time because what I did for 25 years was graphic design for mostly two big Fortune 500 companies, which left me with about 2 weeks free every month, because I had to kowtow to them. When you have big clients like that, you just go, yeah, I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So they were pretty much it. And so they would only keep me working about 2 weeks a month, which really got me by quite well for a long time. And I would take the rest of my time. I was, I was, uh, I was just interested in reading shit. So I would just read and read and read and read and read. So that's the only reason I have any thoughts of any value, if they are at all, is because I've been lucky enough to just get the free time to do stuff. I got to, you know, continue my education in a really weird way. And I kept running into people throughout my life that would kind of direct me and tell me, oh, you might want to look into this, or you might want to look into that, or blah, 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 blah. And it really is. I'm a big believer in luck. It's just about, it's probably the most important thing. And people have asked me, what does it say on your necklace that you wear on the Mr. Deedy show?
Yeah, I was wondering that.
It says luck in English and in Chinese. And I got it when I started playing the character because I thought, oh, that's perfect. Because we say in an episode in season two that luck is the guiding force of the universe. So, that's perfect. And it is what I believe in it. And it's not even a belief anymore. It's neuroscience is pretty much coming to make us all realize that everything is luck. That, you know, we don't really choose to be who we are in any meaningful way. We're more automaton than our animals. it's a slightly depressing thought, but it is what it is, you know, and it gives me a lot of compassion for, you know, my fellow human beings and my fellow creatures. I've kind of become a Jane in terms of, I'm not a vegan or anything like that. I would like to be, but I'm a very weak human being. but I, you know, I won't kill anything other than the stuff that I eat.
Right.
I will not kill anything. So it's very hard when you're battling ants, not to kill them, but, you can do it. You can do it.
With vacuum cleaners and stuff.
Yeah. 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 Actually, I keep my place chalked in a very important way. That chalk stuff really does work. Really does work.
Hmm.
But I'll put things in little jars and carry them out, and I'll take a glass with a piece of paper, and I love sharing my place with little arachnids, and you know, everything's kind of a miracle when you take the God thing out of the equation, where you know, God is a being who, they talk about how valuable life is, but he's a being who can just snap his fingers and make it all happen. Whereas from the secular perspective, you know, we may be it in the universe, in the entire universe. And that's no small thing. So every little form of life has just tremendous value because, you know, we probably came from some small little mammal that survived the big extinction 65 million years ago. So that little creature ended up being extremely valuable to us. And I always think, if there is a God, this is one of the themes that we have running throughout the Deity episodes. If there is a God, the chances that he created this place for us are so infinitesimally small. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there had to be some much better species on some other planet 2 billion years ago that are since no longer. That they were the actual creatures God was interested in, and we're just some kind of remnant of evolution who maybe even God doesn't even have any regard for, you know, or the opposite would be true, that we are the stepping stone, as was Homo habilis, to some future species who God is actually interested in, but they won't be here for another billion years. You know what I mean?
It'll be artificial intelligence.
Yes, of course. Yes.
that'll be the next stage.
Well, hopefully we can figure out how to do that and then get ourselves. I do think that the future of humanity is in getting our consciousness into some kind of semi-organic state or non-organic state whatsoever. That maybe it can just be quantified in some way to where we could live, maybe not forever, because I don't know if anyone really wants to do that.
I'd like to give it a try.
I would like to live a very long time. I don't know if I'd want to live forever. If I was going to live forever, I'd want to have the ability to take just an incredibly long nap.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like me, I'm going to check out for a billion years.
Right,
I'll see you later.
But for you, it would be instantaneous. So I don't know consciousness wouldn't necessarily be satisfying in the sense of, let me take a break, because you wouldn't really, you just wake up the next day. And you know,
yeah, that's true.
It's still you.
That's true. Except for the universe might be a very different place. So it could be interesting all over again. You know what I mean? Oh, shit. You wake up and it's, oh, my God, this is so different. It's like Idiocracy. You know, you wake up and and everything's so incredibly different that all of a sudden now it's kind of interesting again. Because that would be my thought in terms of living forever, is it would just become infinitely boring. I find much of this life, in terms of, I shot a short film called Ennui about the guy who just couldn't take the everyday things that, if you think about the things that you do every day, like things like brushing your teeth and showering and washing your hair and getting ready and putting these clothes on and this belt, there's so much little stupid shit that you have to do every day that just makes me want to put a cap in my own ass. I think if you were doing that for a billion years, you'd be like, I'm done. Okay, I've had enough. My dad, actually, it was a beautiful thing. When my dad died, he was just done. He was just done, and he really wanted to go, and he stopped eating. He'd had an injury from which he totally could have recovered had he taken medication, but he didn't want to take the medication, and he was just done. He'd lived almost 97 years. He felt like he'd seen it all, and kind of had, because he was born into a small town in Pennsylvania with dirt roads and horses, and he himself ended up working on the Apollo and the Gemini and the space shuttle, and so he kind of did see it all. And his last project was global positioning satellites, which we're all using now. It is one of those things where this guy really did see the world was much more like it was 500 years before when he was born than it was by the end of his life. It was an amazing time to be alive.
What perspective that would give you.
Yeah, but he was just done. I'm good. I've had my fill, and I'd like to go now.
And there was no regret of losing God or losing heaven or anything like that.
No, not for him. But there would be for a lot of people. He was an interesting person. That's why we do have to be very compassionate, I always feel, towards people who, there are some people who really do. I mean, when they say, if I believed there was no God, I would, God knows what I would do tomorrow. Well, God wouldn't know, because he wouldn't exist. But someone would know what I would do. And those people, I do. Okay, all right. You just keep praying.
Yeah, keep your beliefs.
Whatever you need to do to not harm me and mine, I'm good. But you know what? I don't want you getting into our school system and teaching children bullshit. You know, I'm going to fight you on that end. But other stuff, I'm fine with you. You know, eating a cracker that you believe turns into the body of Christ.
Well, Mr. Dalton, you call yourself a schmuck. I would more characterize you as an activist. And what I love about what you do is you do your activism in a funny way. And it's hilarious. I'd recommend everybody go check out Brian Keith Dalton's YouTube page, Mr. Deity, and also at MrDeity.com. Is there anything I'm leaving out, sir, as far as appropriate directions that we can send people or how they can talk to you?
Not really. I would just add, I've just started a new series called Prager FU, taking on my old buddy. I used to be good friends with Dennis Prager back when I was religious and conservative. Way. And so taking on my old buddy on some of their stuff, because so many people were writing me about, I had taken on a few Prager U videos, and people were writing me saying, oh, you gotta just go after him on all their shit. Okay, so I started doing that. That's the newest edition. If you're sick of seeing those Prager U videos on your YouTube, you know, when you go and click in and go to watch something, there he is.
And that's a good one that people can, you know, just in the social media age where it keeps popping up, on your feed.
It really does.
Prager something, they can respond with a Mr. Deity
Prager U
episode. Yeah. That would be perfect.
Prager FU.
Prager FU.
Which is, by the way, is so funny, because you can tell the intelligence of the Prager U crowd. That's a horrible thing for me to say. That was so bigoted. But they'll come after me. How vulgar for you to say Prager FU.
Well, civility. Civility.
If it was fuck you, it would be FY, people. The F stands for fake. Prager Fake University. But it does sound good if you say F you. Yes.
Put a spell on you. Thank you to Brian. Thank you to Dave Blair at davefreesong.com/freemusic. Thank you to our patrons. You can also support this broadcast at patreon.com/right and learn more at therighttoreason.com. Next week, I'm going to be doing something that I think I might regret.
I'm going to try to drink two Irishmen under the table and record the whole conversation just for you. It's not going to be a family show, and I'm probably going to say something stupid. In fact, I'm certain I will. Not going to be an episode for you if you're easily offended. We'll be talking to John and Seamus from the Free Thought Profit podcast. Topics will range from Me Too all the way to whether or not we have free will. Wish me luck and send me some aspirin. It's going to be lit. That's next week. Between now and then, you have the right to reason. And one more time, I want to kiss your ass one more time, and you're just going to have to fucking
all right.
But everything I was saying on that, like, about, like, how funny it is and how much I love your show and the activism and all that, I really mean it. And you really were a guy that was one of my first introductions into questioning the indoctrination that I grew up
with. Well, that's so awesome.
I know that makes you uncomfortable to have to kiss your ass, but
it's dope. That actually thrills me.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
It works.
It works. And humor is subversive. I'm telling you, it's the most subversive force in the universe.
If you're comfortable with this, I would add in like little bits of your, you know, and then like do a quick clip of, you know, like you and Lucy talking or something like that, and then get back to our comment. Just kind of keep it fun.
Yeah, you do whatever you want. I'm happy with all of it. At this, you know, I've been doing this 11 years, so I don't give a shit anymore. That's my that's the bottom line.
Right, let me check my recording.
Do anything you want with anything.
Just want to fuck it.
Okay. Just,
if you would have told me back when I became an atheist that I'd be talking to Mr. Deity, I would have flipped out.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty cool,
good.
Man.
Good. I'm just another schmuck on the planet, really.
I'm just some
please,
guy.
Please don't be impressed in any way.
So noted. I am no longer impressed with you.
All right, good.
Let's see. I was just going to kind of freeball this thing.
Yeah.
Not wearing any pants.
Absolutely.
And if I get into some topic that you're like, bro, I don't want to go here, just say so.
Yeah.
Nobody will ever hear that. So
I can't imagine. I have opinions on everything. I'm a fucking asshole.
Right, I'm just... So.
I'm one of those opinionated guys that everyone goes, oh, fucking shit. He's got an opinion on this one, too. He knows,
what a
he knows
surprise.
Nothing of what he speaks, but he's got an opinion.
It's funny because your personality is kind of like the God guy in a lot of ways.
And it's just me with better hair. You know, it really is. I'm a frustrated producer. A lot of creative ideas, not as many. Genes that said let's do the follow through thing. So Deity and I are very, very similar.
It just worked.
Yeah.
Out. All right, I'm gonna get rocking and rolling. I'll introduce you as filmmaker and producer. Would that be inappropriate?
Sure, sure. I really don't care. You can produce. You can call me the Mother Teresa of atheism. I wouldn't give a shit.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either, but.